Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, if you look up wit in the playwright dictionary, if there is one, you would surely find the names Alan Ayckbourn and David Ives. Now, neither young men, they are still able to make you forget your troubles for a few hours and bathe in the sheer pleasure of their worldly words. Ayckbourn is a Brit, the man behind some 80 plays. Ives is an American, but relishes in creating poetic takes on famous or forgotten ones of past centuries. Right now, his latest, called Metro Maniacs, is playing at the Duke Theater on 42nd Street. It's a production of the always inventive Red Bull Theater Company. Now, this one is translated from an obscure work written by one Alexis Piron in 1738. It remains a period piece, but Ives, as usual, does it all in rhymes that boggle the mind, where verse becomes your vice and vice versa. Brittany with kitteny, and who knew there were so many ways to play with incognito. There is plenty of winking going on in this one. One character notes, my God, this is a lot of exposition. There is a plot here of sorts, actually a plot within a plot, one of those mistaken identity, or to be more current, fake ones, a male poet masquerading as a poetess. But what matters here is the patter, the pentameter petting, and the couplet coupling. Oh, see, it's infectious. Metromaniacs is fun, though it grows a tad tiresome. And to be frank, one act would likely be satisfying enough. Though to watch this cast is a reminder once again how many talented performers this city boasts. The names here worth mentioning and remembering are Noah Aberback-Katz, Christian Kahn, Adam Green, Peter Kybart, Adam Lefebvre, Amelia Peddle, and Dina Thomas. Lots of Juilliards in these resumes, and, well, no surprise there. And now we move over to 59 East 59, where Alan Ayckbourn's, more accurately Sir Alan Ayckbourn's, A Brief History of Women is part of the theater's annual Brits Off-Broadway Festival. Now, I don't know what I expected, likely some farce that makes me wonder what the hell they think is funny over there. But this is a moving, witty, thought-provoking, and beautifully performed production. Now, it's not short, 2.5 hours, done in 4 parts. I've seen the word sketches used, but that's limiting their impact. In the first scene, we are in 1925, the second 1945, the third 1965, and the final 1985. They all take place within one structure, which begins as a manor, is transformed next into a girls' school, then an art center, and finally a hotel. There is only one character who remains throughout, portrayed by Anthony Eden, who is spectacular, as are Russell Dixon, Frances Marshall, Laura Matthews, Lawrence Pierce, and Louise Shuttleworth, who flamboyantly embody a wide assortment of folks. They are beautifully and simply directed by the playwright. So keep an eye on the invisible doors and keep your ears open to hear the musical interludes, which are surprisingly gorgeous. I am a sucker for plays in which you watch lives go by that force you to consider or reconsider your own. Ayckbourn is a master of the awkward and inappropriate, and there's plenty of that here. Is it a feminist rant? Well, despite the title, not in the least. There are plenty of sentiments, like men, I gave up trying to civilize them years ago. Women, trust them at your peril. Give them an inch of rope and they form a lynch mob. There are countless memorable lines here. My hand got tired of trying to collect them. Lambasting the Labor Party, one character exclaims, they imply the rest of us never do a stroke of work. And lamenting those world wars, we are a country depleted of young men and filled with emotionally damaged women. The most outrageous section is the second one, in which a very bad children's play is being rehearsed. Jack and the Beanstalk may be a bridge too far, notes one frustrated character. And finally, whoever imagined that the words, a house always remembers you, would resonate so powerfully. Well, maybe it was my mood, but A Brief History of Women certainly hit the spot for me. Now, in terms of other theater news, of course, we had the Tony nominations last week. Surprises? Not really any I can think of. I would say putting Michael Cera in the featured as in supporting category for Lobby Hero is odd since he's on stage virtually the entire show. This was an obviously calculated move in that the main actor category is so competitive this year. But it turns out that no one is going to challenge Nathan Lane for Angels in America in the supporting category, so all this finagling was a moot exercise. If I had to make predictions, I'd say Andrew Garfield, Nathan Lane, Denise Goff, director Marianne Elliott, and the play itself all win for Angels. And in the musical half, you have to figure My Fair Lady, and the lady herself, Lauren Ambrose, will take most of those honors. Some seem surprised that SpongeBob SquarePants racked up so many nominations, but keep in mind how few original musicals there were this season. Virtually all of them are nominated, and I'd be surprised if the band's Visit did not win. That and Once on This Island, which is up for Best Revival of a Musical, likely got a necessary bump from the Tony nominations. The shows are rarely sold out, and half-price tickets are usually available. But a win, or more importantly, a loss, could determine whether they last through the summer. It may not matter, since everyone will be lining up then to officially say goodbye, Dolly, as Bette Midler returns for 6 weeks to finish off the musical's one-year run. She and the show won Tony's last season. Bernadette Peters has been a great fill-in, though certainly nowhere near the hot ticket as Bette. I would have to rack my brain to think of another instance when the first star or stars of a show came back to finish a run. But, Jill, did Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick do it with the producers?
I believe that's really interesting. Didn't they came back? Yeah, of course.
I think they did.
They did come back.
Yeah, as I was, composing this, and I thought, wait a minute, they did come back for a final.
Yeah, but what I found striking, and this is just, I don't know, the civilianship, that it obviously, and this has been with Hello, Dolly. Can you say Carol Channing? You know, it's just one of those. It's who Dolly is. It's who is portraying Dolly. And if you have someone as, it's actually reminding me now of, you know, when Bernadette Peters did Annie Get Your Gun.
Yes.
And then she was replaced, I think, with Reba McEntire. I'm not positive, or maybe I'm conflating
absolutely
something.
Absolutely replaced, who got much better reviews. People thought Bernadette was miscast in that one.
Right. And so it's not, you know, it's not necessarily the talent of the actress, but more there are just certain fits. You can't fool audiences into believing that something's a fit, especially when you just had a fit.
Exactly. And it's really a good, remember Annie Get Your Gun. That was really interesting because nobody ever says anything bad about Bernadette Peters, and she was fine, but it wasn't a perfect fit, and they didn't really notice that until the perfect fit came in.
Right.
I would say that's pretty rare that the second one's better than the first, but in that case, that's a really good reminder. And of course, Carol Channing did go back to do Dolly again, but not in the same run. I think she did it like a decades later.
Oh, decades, but the point is that she is... in the same way that Bette Midler will always be associated in people's minds with, the 70s and 80s in New York.
Yeah.
Carol Channing will always be associated in people's minds with Hello, Dolly.
Exactly.
And even when she came back and did it, and, you know, it was clearly several decades on from when, you know, maybe she should have. But that's neither here nor there, because people are happy to go out and see it. And that's as it should be, because... music up, that's entertainment.
Yeah, no, that's true. And there are certain roles that were so deeply associated with an actress. Barbra Streisand with Funny Girl. It would be very hard. And they tried to do a reprise of that. And coincidentally, their star was Lauren Ambrose, who's now Eliza Doolittle. But that one didn't work. I don't think it ever even got off the ground, but... you know, that would be a hard one to lose. Barbra Streisand also did the movie of Funny Girl, so she was really embedded in our heads as Fanny Bryce. But, this was an interesting one. It's surprising that Bette Midler, I guess she missed doing it or just wanted, I don't know. They obviously offered her a lot of money. and why not? Listen, you know, with these big shows like Denzel Washington now and The Iceman Cometh, which I'm going to see this week, by the way, I figure when he leaves that show, they're not going to bring in somebody else. That's about Denzel right now. Not that Iceman Cometh hasn't been done numerous times with great actors, but right now the draw is Denzel Washington, and that's always a tricky one. How do you bring some? Well, that's what they did with Dolly. They brought in a really good second choice, and the show's done well, but not well enough.
It's tricky. You know, this is just one of the nuances of the actual business of the industry that I think that people don't. Once again, to overuse the civilian word, you know, you just don't know. You don't know the ingredients of the special sauce. And even if you've got something on paper, you know, or a, you know, back to Fitz, but even if you've got something on paper, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work in production.
That's right. There's just no way of knowing until you get it up on its feet and you see what it looks like. And, by the way, Bruce Springsteen is going all the way through December. Nobody's going to replace him playing Bruce Springsteen, of course. And, you know, he's pulling in $2 million a week. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and they extended it. And that, you know, this was the last, what is it, through November now or something? September?
It's through December, through the end of the year. Yeah. It's basically going a year and 2 months longer, I think, than it was expected.
Yeah, and it worked.
That's a lot of money. Yeah, it's interesting. You don't hear people talk about it that much, but obviously tourists are filling those, or somebody's filling those seats every single night. And he's taking home a lot of money. Good for him, because he gives a lot of it away. So God bless him.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.